Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Dissidents and Dictators, the flagship podcast from the Human Rights Foundation. My name is Casey Michelle, and alongside my wonderful co-host, Alicia Maldonado, say hi, Alicia.
Hello.
We have a special episode for you today. We'll be joined by Rushan Abbas, one of the leading voices highlighting the crimes of the Chinese Communist Party against Uyghurs in China. Rushan has an incredible history, some of which we'll talk about today, doing everything from working as the first Uyghur reporter for Radio Free Asia to founding the group Campaign for Uyghurs and becoming one of the key figures in helping highlight many of the developments in the Uyghur region and in pushing legislation in places like Washington to help Uyghur populations. So stick around because we have plenty to talk about. Alicia, how are you today?
I'm doing well.
Oh, I can hear you. Your voice is back.
Do I sound better?
Oh, finally.
Rushan, I've been sick. I've had no voice for about a month, and Casey's been on my case about it.
Yes, I have. I'm no doctor, but I tell you, when you don't have a voice and you have a podcast, it's a difficult thing.
It's a small problem.
Rushan, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this atrocity of the century.
Absolutely. Rushan, let's just dive right into it. I think a lot of folks, certainly listeners of this podcast, are maybe generally familiar with the Uyghur region, with Uyghur populations, and even beyond that, the genocidal crimes of the Chinese Communist Party against Uyghurs. Can you give us, though, just kind of a brief primer about what is happening in the Uyghur region? What is the CCP doing? What do we know is actually going on in the Uyghur region in China?
Since 1949, the occupation of the Chinese Communist government of our homeland, they have been using different labels to persecute Uyghur people. During the 50s, Uyghurs were persecuted under the label of nationalism. And then later, during the 60s and the Cultural Revolution, it was the time that I was born, the Uyghurs were persecuted under the label of counter-revolutionaries. And then 80s, when I was young, when I was going to high school and university, we had a little bit of freedom when China established diplomatic relations with the United States and most of the Western democratic countries. Mm. And we were able to oppose and organize a couple protests to defend Uyghur people's human rights, because we have been always being treated as secondary citizens in our homeland. Mm. But right after the 9/11 tragedy in the United States, the Uyghurs in overnight labeled by the Chinese regime as terrorists, and every single aspect of religion started to being criminalized. And fast forward to 2014, they started to build concentration camps to hold innocent people only because of the Uyghur people's ethnicity and religion and because of the language that we speak. And now current situation is the Uyghurs are facing full-fledged genocide, basically, mm-hmm. what we are witnessing in my homeland under the rule of the Chinese communist occupation is nothing short of an active genocide as the government is sterilizing the Uyghur women, giving them forced abortions. About a million Uyghur children are taken from their families. Millions of people are in detention, and the millions more are sent to forced labor facilities mm-hmm. as modern slaves.
This is, I think, the statistic that is the most striking one still for me on my end is that the concentration camp system that the CCP has set up, this is the biggest concentration camp system anywhere in the world since the Holocaust, since the Second World War, and it is ongoing as we have this conversation today.
Yes, absolutely. It's the largest incarceration of ethnic groups since the Holocaust. Every single aspect of the religion is being criminalized. Being Uyghur became a crime of mm-hmm. people who's living in back home. I have been watching this situation deteriorated to Uyghurs last several years. And then in 2017, I received the news that 24 of my husband's family members went missing and they were likely to be detained in concentration camps. My parents-in-laws, three of my sister-in-laws, their husbands, brother-in-law and his wife, 14 of my husband's nieces and nephews. And then in 2018, in September, I participated in a panel. That was my first time speaking publicly at the Hudson Institute. I exposed China's detention camps and the genocidal crimes. Only 6 days after that, the authorities arbitrarily detained my own sister, a retired medical doctor, and who's to this day remains a hostage in detention, in prison, actually. She's, you know, my sister Gulshan Abbas is a political person. And the surroundings, the circumstances that surrounding her abduction are direct retaliation due to my activism as an American citizen. Basically, my freedom of speech in United States cost my innocent sister's freedom back home.
And Roshana, again, this is the textbook definition of genocide. It is the attempted destruction of an entire people, an entire nation, in whole or in part, eliminating Uyghur identity, eliminating Uyghur history, and doing this, again, on the backs of this gargantuan, sprawling concentration camp system. Again, this is genocide through and through.
Roshana, I wanted to ask you, for a number of years, when the concentration camps were being built and just coming out, people were kind of in doubt that they were real. And no one was really talking about this huge genocide. Are you finding that it's still underreported in many ways? Are you finding that more people are talking about it, but it's still underreported? Or how do you see the conversation moving, from when the concentration camps were first brought to light till now?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for pointing out that that very crucial point. My frustration is the atrocities, the crimes against humanity, and the genocide has been confirmed by around a dozen governments and the parliaments around the world, including the US and Canada, and the independent tribunal in London, Uyghur tribunal, declared that what China is doing is genocide, crimes against humanity. And also we have human rights, UN, Human Rights High Commissioner's Uyghur report, Xinjiang report. Also, it didn't say it's genocide, but it described every single aspect, the elements of United Nations' own description of crimes of genocide under the Geneva Convention. Yet, they said may constitute crimes against humanity, but the elements are there, the description is there. And the 13 tons of human here, imagine how many people does that represent? Right. 13 tons of Uyghur peoples here made it over to United States Customs and Border Patrol. Did you see that in mainstream media? No. Do you see that it's being reported on the mainstream media when something like this is happening? No. Mm-hmm. All these feminists, human rights activists, famous celebrities, talk show hosts, they are so vocal against any kind of social injustice. Hollywood celebrities, NBA athletes, rightfully they should speak against any kind of human rights abuses, right? Mm-hmm. But why are they silent when Chinese embassy in United States confirming, celebrating their genocidal policies by openly tweeting and saying that through our policies, Uyghur women are no longer baby-making machines.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Do you see Oprah Winfrey is talking or interviewing Uyghur activists? No. Do you see it's being reported on the evening news? No. You know, I came to the United States in 1989, and I left my parents, my loved ones, my home, the life that I had built, because I was looking for something that does not exist in China, the freedom and democracy. And that's what I'm seeing in the United States, that freedom and the democracy is at stake because China's money, the business, economy, and the influence that China is over our mainstream media and Hollywood and the films and the TVs and the, all these CEOs giving Xi Jinping stand-up ovation in San Francisco.
The standing ovation was especially, and this because this wasn't 10 years ago. This was, what, 1 year ago maybe when this happened?
Right.
Yeah, just last November, less than 6 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Roshan, I wanted to ask, to bring things back to you personally. You came to the U.S. in 1989. As I understand it, I mean, you came over to study, what was it? It was plant pathology, I believe. It wasn't like you came over as an activist, as a campaigner, as a political organizer. You came over as you know, just as many other people do, to study, to enjoy life here in the United States of America. Do you? I guess what I'm wondering is, when you look back over the last, what is that, 35 years at this point, are there major inflection points in your life that you can point to, whether it was the panel in 2018 or even before that, that led you to where you are right now, a running campaign for Uyghurs?
Yeah, absolutely. I never anticipated becoming a full-time activist. As you mentioned when you introduced me, I was a reporter for Radio Free Asia, but I resigned my job. I moved to California for family reasons in 2000. And I had a very different life until just 5-6 years ago. I was a devoted mother. And I had a really successful career. I was working as the International Business Development Director. I never imagined I'll be traveling around the world, speaking about the tragedy and the genocide of my people. The detention of my sister actually completely changed my life. A year after she was taken, 1 year anniversary of her detention, I quit my job. And I became a full-time activist, and I doubled down my efforts. And I am working full-time for Campaign for Uyghurs right now. So that is actually a turning point of my life. When you look at it, you know, the Chinese government actually, it's strange to say this, but the Chinese government actually made me to become a full-time activist while I was just advocating for my people at the site while I was working. I was just, speaking and trying to defend human rights for Uyghur people. But here I am because of this transnational repression from the Chinese government.
What the CCP never seems to realize is that the more they try to crush dissent, the more it crops up and the more they have to do their bad work again to try to keep you quiet and people like you.
Well, Roshan, I imagine, again, given what your family has had to go through, continues to go through, your sister, everyone else, the folks in Beijing are perfectly aware of what you are doing and the impact you have been having for years and years, and the impact that your colleagues at Campaign for Uyghurs and other Uyghur rights organizations continue to have. Again, it is this action and reaction, this attempt to stifle criticism and dissent, and yet in the process creating and amplifying it that much more. Again, I mean, it's the reason we're having you on today, we're speaking to you, Roshan, is because of the impact you have already had and continue to have, as well as Campaign for Uyghurs. I was wondering, Roshan, can you actually tell us about the organization that you are running, the Campaign for Uyghurs? What do you do? It's been around since, what, 2017?
Yeah. We established Campaign for Uyghurs in the end of 2017. And but again, I was working full time and just doing it at the site whenever I have free time. But I realized, you know, the only way to handle a bully is to stand up against them and hold them to account. So now we have a really wonderful team at Campaign for Uyghurs. We advocate for the democratic and human rights of the Uyghur people while we expose the CCP's crimes. A lot of work that we do also includes bottom-up mobilization of the Uyghurs in diaspora and the educating and the mobilizing the Uyghurs in diaspora, as well as the grassroots organizations around the world. The Uyghurs in the Western democratic countries like the United States and Europe is the youngest and the smallest population in the in diaspora. When I came to the United States 35 years ago, we only had a handful of Uyghurs, like 10, 15. We used to count. Now still, there are about 10,000 Uyghurs in the United States, and the same thing in Canada, 3,000, 4,000, and in entire Europe, there might be about 15,000, 20,000 Uyghurs. So we need the support of the general public. 90-95% of the general public has never heard of Uyghurs. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything what's happening. So we hold advocacy training workshops in areas of the world where there are denser Uyghur populations to empower them and equip them with the skills they need to conduct advocacy within their own perspective communities and their own. And the Campaign for Uyghurs is headquartered in Washington, D.C. So we also work and raise awareness and support key actions by the U.S. Government, and the, we support different bills and legislations to hold the Chinese government accountable. And we are also a proud member, one of the founding members of the End Uyghur Forced Labor Coalition, and that works specifically on the corporate and the government accountability for the CCP's forced labor. Forced labor, and then we work really closely with universities and as well as different NGOs. So in recognition of our efforts, Campaign for Uyghurs was awarded the World Democracy Courage Tribute in 2021, and also Campaign for Uyghurs is nominated for Nobel Peace Prize in 2022. Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully it's not too long before you actually win a Nobel Peace Prize. We will certainly be pushing pushing for you in that sense. So, Rashan, I wanted to bring things also back to where we are right now in 2024. You know, you and your colleagues work primarily out of Washington. You know, we've seen some legislation out of Washington in recent years about Uyghur forced labor protection. Again, you know, things like supply chain management and transparency. And I saw that it was, I guess we're in April, so 2 months ago now, the U.S. House of Representatives also passed the Uyghur Policy Act. I was wondering if you could talk just momentarily about where you see momentum in terms of policy responses, in terms of legislative responses, or maybe even solutions. Are there things we should be watching for in the coming months in terms of policy responses out of the West?
Yes, as you said, you know, also we already have the UFLPA, Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, which started to implement in this June. It will be 2 years since we started to implement that. But because of some of the loopholes, as the ministers, that if it's $800 or less, the companies or products are not subject to UFLPA. There, you know, companies like Shane and Temu are using this loophole and bombarding with small packages and still taking benefit, you know, getting benefit out of the Uyghur slaves, Uyghur forced labor, and making this genocide a profitable venture for the Chinese government. So, the momentum is right now, yes, we have a strong support at the Hill, luckily supported by both parties, bipartisan support that we have at the Hill. And it, you know, I commend the defending the human dignity and the, you know, recognizing the Uyghur genocide as a humanity issue. And the conscience of the world is being tested, and we have a very strong support from both parties. But now we have Uyghur Policy Act and the Stop Uyghur, Stop Forced Organ Harvesting Act, HR 1154, and as well as Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act, you know, such a TikTok, and all these are passed in the House, but it's not moving forward at the Senate yet. So we really want to see It's being, you know, pushed forward at the Senate. We have established Campaign for Uyghur, spearheaded the establishment of the Congressional Uyghur Caucus. It was led by Congressman Tom Suozzi from New York and Congressman Chris Smith. And now we are relaunching that. Actually, on the April 16th, we are going to have a launch of the Congressional Human Rights Caucus at the Hill, which is, you know, this is a new collaborative effort between the members of the Congress on Capitol Hill to the work closely on the Uyghur-related, China-related bills. So, yeah, those are the current momentum right now. Good. And we really need more programs like this podcast that you are doing. I'm really appreciative for this opportunity. We need more attention. We need more journalists continue to report and continue the momentum. So it's not going to push all to the side that they put on the back burner.
Well, Ruchana, we again are honored to have you on today. And you know, here at the Human Rights Foundation, you know, we try to highlight so many of the crimes that the CCP continues to commit, not least what is going on in the Uyghur region in terms of some of the work we do on the relationship between forced labor, Uyghur forced labor, and cotton harvesting, and how that impacts the fashion industry writ large, to say nothing of how Chinese and Beijing-led corruption, transnational illicit financial flows, transnational repression also helps strengthen and entrench the regime in Beijing. And again, building up partnerships, building up new constituencies, educating others around about the crimes of the CCP is certainly something that we do and will continue to do at the Human Rights Foundation.
And I just wanted to bring up one more. I know that we're kind of getting to the end here, but, you know, going back earlier, we were talking about things that are underreported. And I saw this piece that you did with Massimo Intervigne from Bitter Winter. Oh, sorry, Massimo. I used to work with them on genocide tours. And I just wanted you to briefly kind of touch on that if you can do, because while we're talking about how people don't know, so many people don't know who, you know, Uyghurs are or that they exist, the CCP is trying to bring tourism campaigns and influencers to take over social media so that the only thing that you will see from the Uyghur region are these really beautiful views of the area. Could you talk about that really quickly?
Yes, actually. From the CCP, it's expected because they are the king of the lies and the false narratives and the propaganda. You know, they do that. And they right now, especially, they are really pushing hard on the denialism and try to show the world that everything is normal. Mm-hmm. But what's disappointing is large corporations, large companies like Microsoft, that it's, you know, censorship. If you search Microsoft in the United States, if you search and look for Uyghur atrocity, you see what's happening in the U.S., you know, when you just search the search engine gives you what's happening with pictures and articles. But when you, if you use VPN, yeah, and they search in China, or anybody in China searching for Uyghur, they get nothing but all the propaganda videos. Mm-hmm. There are 1.4 billion Chinese general public. They need to be educated, and Microsoft should not be complicit with China's genocide denialism as what they are doing right now, bombarding the social media, bombarding the media with false narratives. So it's extremely important to have the right public sentiment, and the journalists should report what is the reality, and the public sentiment is what changes the public policy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anybody who's listening this podcast, if you are a journalist or, you know, a content creator or in the media, please use your platforms in order to raise awareness about the Uyghur genocide and hold China's disinformation and the propaganda and the crimes against humanity and the genocidal actions accountable. And you can reach out to us and we can connect you to Uyghurs who need those platforms to tell their stories. We have actual eyewitnesses. We have actual victims who lived in the camps, former camp victims. Because of the massive surveillance in the region, and we do not have on the ground footage that can be used to circulate and raise awareness. This is why, you know, storytelling of the people who actually been through those atrocities in those living in diaspora is so important. So many industries and the goods that we buy day to day have Uyghur forced labor in their, you know, supply chains. So please use the resources we have at our site to identify which brands are complicit, and use your purchasing power to raise awareness to stop contributing to the profit of these companies.
And Roshan, that is at campaignforuyghurs.org, where listeners can learn more, read more, and join the fight to highlight the crimes again of the CCP and do what they can, whether in the West or elsewhere, to help the Uyghur populations still struggling, still suffering under, as is described on the website, the most organized genocide in human history, which is happening right now.
Yes, exactly. To follow us on social media, Campaign for Uyghurs or Roshan Abbas, or visit our website to take action.
Roshan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Roshan.
The Human Rights Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that promotes and protects human rights globally with a focus on closed societies. We promote freedom where it's most at risk, in countries ruled by authoritarian regimes.